Xbox.
We've hippity-ed and hoppity-ed, and we're off to a different land. But it's not that all that different because we're just amongst friends, dear, dear people who have been a part of this program since its inception, and it's an absolute delight to have them both in the same room and together. They are...
Because we're old.
No. Well, myself included. And we... And two great booksellers from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And it's wonderful to have you here. Your stores have been around both over 50 years. And that is a stunning achievement. So congratulations to both of you. We welcome Joan Grenier, owner of the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Good morning, Joan. How are you?
Oh, good morning, Joe. It's great to see you again.
Wonderful to see you. Thank you so much for being here. And our good friend Matt Tannenbaum from the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Joe. Nice to see you.
Good to see you.
And Joan, what a pleasure to sit with you today.
You know, I didn't know until the ride over. I hadn't checked the email we got. I thought, yes.
Yeah, get to be on with Matt. That's always fun.
We've known each other not quite 50 years.
I don't think so. But you didn't have a real cash register when I met you.
Well, no, I still do.
I had a real cash register. I just didn't have any electricity. That was the difference.
Well,
when did that come in?
2016. We got our first 2016. So I bought the store in 76, and we ran for the first 30 years.
Yeah.
Or 40 years.
Cigar box?
No, the cash register went all the way up to $3.99.
but he just like kind of slams his fist down and then the drawer pops open.
That's right.
And then he makes change and sends you on your way. It's pretty good. It's wonderful to have these two incredible booksellers with us. They have great lists today. Matt, let us begin with you.
Thank you, Joe. I'm going to start with Carol Gilligan's new book. Carol Gilligan, her new novel, Solstice. Carol is known as the author of In a Different Voice that she published back in 1982, debunking the idea that women's voices were the same as men's and that the sense of moral value that women had was different and less valued than men's. And so she took that on and became one of the Time Magazine's most famous people of the 20th century or something like that. And then, so her new novel, this is her second novel, and Carol's a friend of mine, I have to say, I'm glad to say. This novel is called Solstice. It's about, it goes to those rules of patriarchy, and it's the story of a couple who've been together for 30 years. They each have their own career. She's a dancer. He is a journalist. They have three children. They have committed infidelities over the times of their lives. And this novel is about those infidelities and getting and working through those infidelities and the sense of the difference between women and men. And Eve, the choreographer, the dancer choreographer, finds...
Was it 900 pages? How long?
finds the dance that she wants to do based on an old story in the Bible that I'm not going to give away because you want to read the book.
Okay. It is Solstice by Carol Gilligan. Very cool. Joan.
And we both must have sold many copies of In a Different Voice.
Absolutely.
Before you had a computer, so you probably don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
Doesn't have records of that, but that's all right.
Well, I'm going to start with The People's Historian, The Outsized Life of Howard Zinn, written by Dave Zirin, who many people will know. He's the lefty sports writer for The Nation magazine. He's written a number of books himself. I really enjoyed this book. I had the opportunity to meet Howard a few times, which I'll talk about. But what an incredible life. Jewish parents who came to this country. And Howard was born here. Four brothers. He's the oldest. They were very poor, as a lot of Eastern European Jews were when they first came. He eventually became a ship fitter because he scored 100% on a civil service test. He was a bombardier in World War II, which he wrote about later in life. Historian, teacher, author, playwright, orator, and involved in many of the social movements from the 1940s until his death in 2010 at 87. So I'm just going to hit a couple of the high points of his life. He did end up teaching at Spelman College, and I think it was 1958 till 63 or 4. And that's the civil rights movement is very active. Spelman is an all-black women's college.
Where is that?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay.
And eventually, you know, he was supporting the students, but the president of the college thought that they should not be, you know, going out on these sit-ins and marches, and eventually fired him. At that point, he was also working with SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. He was one of the older advisor, along with Ella Baker, another very famous activist. And eventually, he heads to BU, Boston right. University in Massachusetts. And he is at loggerheads for decades with the incoming president, John Silver.
Oh, John Silver?
Yeah.
Oh, bad man.
Terrible. And he wouldn't even give him like a $2,000 raise one year when he was due that. So he did... I skipped his college, but he did go on the GI Bill. He had a BA from NYU, and he earned a master's and a PhD in 1958 from Columbia University. So he had a good academic background. He married Roz, who he was married to for 60-odd years, Rosalind Schechter. They grew up in Brooklyn together, and they had two children, one of which... is married to a person you know. So he taught at BU for 24 years. He was beloved by students. He would have a classroom overflowing with 400 students, and it was a non-required course on civil liberties. Another reason that Silver didn't like him. He was very popular. And besides writing, well, the first book was People's History, not his first book, but the first book that went on the bestseller that we both sold right. many copies of, People's History of the United States, 1492 to the present, published in 1980, still in print, over 4 million copies sold. Mm.
One of his students was a guy named Harvey Wasserman. Did you know this name? Harvey Wasserman,
yeah.
His book came out before Howard's. It was called Howard Wasserman's History of the United States. And I remember reading that in the 70s and then realizing that he was a student of Zinn's when
yeah.
Zinn's book came out.
And then to kind of bring it back to our lives, John and mine, they wrote another book along with Anthony Arno, The Voices of a People's History.
Right.
And they were performing it in New York with actors. And then they decided to bring it around the country. And we brought it to Mount Holyoke College. And it was amazing. I've never seen their largest auditorium so full.
Wow.
And my husband, John, who's here, he can't talk. He's not a microphone. But he helped organize it.
He can talk. We just won't hear him. That's all right.
But it was amazing, and we got to go out with Howard. And then towards the end of his life, for 2 years, he toured with Dave Sirin because he couldn't stand up for so long as he used to.
Right.
And so he and Dave would sit down. And up until about a month, he ended up having a heart attack and drowning.
And
well, not no, he didn't drown, but he was in a swimming pool. Anyway... it's a great book.
It looks like a terrific book. I haven't gotten my copies yet. I've got copies coming in. Okay. And I'm not going to steal yours.
Well, good. We don't want any of that going on here. The People's Historian, The Outsized Life of Howard Zinn by Dave Zirin.
Have you ever had Dave?
I believe I, yes, we've had both Howard Zinn and Dave.
Okay.
Yeah, very cool. All right, Matt.
I'm going to switch gears. We're staying, it's still the summer. It's August. Did you ever have this guy, Randall Sullivan, on? His book, The First All-Star Game.
Maybe.
The First All-Star Game is about Babe Ruth. The subtitle is Babe Ruth, FDR, and America at the Crossroads. So the First All-Star Game was played in 1933 in Chicago, and when the country was devastated by the Depression, and it was a brainstorm of a sports writer from Chicago, and it was also a chance for Roosevelt to come to Chicago, where the mayor of Chicago had been assassinated the year before,
that
spring before.
Who was that?
Chermak, Anton Chermak. The anarchist, I got to have an anarchist here, tried to kill Roosevelt, and Chermak was wounded in the attack in Miami, and they were good friends. They had actually thrown out the first pitch the year before at the 32 World Series, the year that Babe Ruth hit the called shot in Wrigley Field, where the Yankees beat the Cubs. What, 4-0, 4-0? Anyway, so baseball is the heart of America, and the sports writer said, you know, we got to get the country behind this, and it was a great great event. The Chicago World's Fair was happening at the same time. It was supposed to be a one-off, but it was the great American Leaguers against the great National Leaguers. Who won the game? The American League won the game. Babe Ruth hit the first American League All-Star home run. The next year, think about the All-Star game. People think about the year that Carl Hubbell in the National League struck out 5 American League All-Stars in a row. But that was not this first game. That was the second game. That's another book altogether. But this is a great book full of anecdotes about ball players and other people bringing the first All-Star game to life.
This is when the actual baseball game was the most important thing about the All-Star game.
Yes.
That's not the case anymore, I would say.
You know, I haven't watched since, you know, probably since I got electricity.
3 whole years? The first All-Star game, Babe Ruth, FDR, and America at the Crossroads. Do you want to go right into your next baseball book?
Yeah, sure. Well, my brother Ted is right here in the studio with us.
Hi, Ted!
And he has written a book of poetry called The Dream Life of Teddy Baseball. And this book brought him to Polar Park in Worcester last Saturday, where he was part of the writers, he was the writer at the writers series, at Larry Lucchino writers series, and he threw out the first pitch at Polar Park. And Teddy and I warmed up on the field before the game. It was a lot of fun to have a catch in a major in a minor league ballpark.
Where's Polar
Worcester.
Park?
Worcester.
Oh, you could have stopped on your way, or your way back.
You could have written. All right.
And this is a book of poetry. I'm going to try to find a quick poem to read. How about this one? You want to read it? Why don't you read it, Ted?
Why don't you let the author read
Perspective.
It?
Yeah. The author's right here.
Oh, put your glasses on.
All right. What is the prerequisite?
This is called Perspective.
Oh, we don't have your mic on.
Here,
yeah, okay,
mine.
There you go. Okay.
This is called Perspective. In 1876, America celebrated its centennial. Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone. The presidential election was contentious, characterized by fraud and voter suppression. Jesse James and his gang botched a robbery in Northfield, Minnesota. And on June 26th, the day that Custer faced the Lakota Sioux, the Cheyenne, and his own personal demons at the Battle of Little Bighorn in the Montana Territories, the Hartford Blues beat the Louisville Grays 3-0 at the dawn of the National League.
Wow. All right. Good stuff.
You didn't know that.
I did not know that. This is The Dream Life of Teddy Baseball, Musings by Teddy Tenenbaum. Very nice. Anything else you want to say about that, Matt?
The book's available at
okay.
the bookstore and at bookshop.org.
All right, bookshop.org.
And Joan, if you want copies, We'll talk.
Okay, we'll talk.
Okay.
All right, Joan, go ahead.
Okay, so I know
do a twofer.
regime change inside the imperial presidency of Donald Trump. Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swain. It's been on the bestseller list off and on when you could get the book. At first, it really ran out. I know a lot of people probably have read this. I just want to really promote it because I think it's amazing journalism. This is the first year of Trump's second term, which we've all lived through. But there's so much that has gone in, that's happened in 1 year. And how these reporters, well, first of all, they're great reporters and they have lots of contacts. And people seem to talk to them. This is like being a fly on the wall in the Oval Office or Mar-a-Lago. And
it's incredible how they get access.
Yes, it is.
You think that the
but they're not going to tell you their sources. So
no, no. Okay.
But they're so respected. They're both at the New York Times now. We all know some of the things that he did around. I'm talking about Trump now. Retribution, attacking immigrants. My dad was an immigrant to this country, so I'm really...
Our dad, too. Yeah, yeah.
Your dad, too. Oh, yeah. Okay. And it wasn't easy when they came. What year did your...
Mid-20s. 23
for my dad.
Illegal.
Undocumented.
From...
Yeah. What is now Ukraine was Poland.
Was... Okay.
But it was 24. 23, your dad, inside illegal. 24, the Dawes Act threw him out.
But he was French-Canadian, so it's a little unclear if he could have gotten in 24. Anyway, he was 13, and he was the oldest of 7. He became the oldest of 10. And they stopped them because my grandmother had 7 kids and $7. I know I'm not talking about the book.
No, that's good. That's all good stuff.
Anyway, we also know how Trump treats women, which is another big problem for me. And in the fact, he calls Maggie Haberman maggot. Can you imagine? So the last chapter, it's a 400 plus page book. The last chapter is titled Plunder, which I think is very, very important. And the numbers are staggering how rich Trump has gotten in, you know, a year. Well, in this book, a year and a little over a year. The Saudi Arabia crown prince directs his, you know, they have these huge public investment funds, to invest $2 billion in Jared Kushner's investment firm. And then Qatar and UAE follow suit, you know. And 6 months into his term, Trump was wealthier than he had ever been, thanks largely to cryptocurrency. But I know that's going kind of up and down. And that's an industry his administration is in charge of regulating. And then, of course, World Liberty Financial, his sons, the Wyckoff sons, they get in January 2026, just this past January, UAE Sovereign Fund acquires 49% in World Liberty Financial, which is owned by them. And October 2025, Forbes estimates that college-age Barron Trump is worth $150 million. It's just astounding. And then, of course, Melania got paid by Bezos for that terrible film. $28 million, which hardly anybody watched. So the value of this book is a deep dive of their reporting into the first year of Trump's second term. It's all in one book, which is great. And it's remarkable to have this, and I'm so grateful for their work. Read it, buy it, and pass it on. There are many people who voted for Trump and are deeply disappointed in what he and his allies have done to our country. And they should be reading this book along with all of us.
The one thing I have to say about this book is that so many of these books come out that are, you know, grab the headlines and tell different things. And then once somebody like me then sits down and reads the book, I'm like, oh, okay, well, I've seen all this on... This is not the case with this.
Right.
I am fascinated by how much there's in there that we have not heard. And when you hear it in its totality, it's just stunning. So even if you've seen them 50 times on television, it's still worth reading because it's the whole story.
And at the end, the epilogue, they go in to meet with him, and they think
yes,
they're going to talk with him about that. But eventually they get, he wants to talk about this paper that this historian wrote about great, powerful men. You know, he wants to compare himself to Hitler and all the other ones, Mao, Stalin, Genghis Khan. Well, it turns out that that paper is not written by a historian. It's written by Gary Player's caddy. They had to dig down and find that out.
Thank you, Joe.
Hence reporting. All right. One other. You wanted to get another book in there.
Yes. Well, this is a beautiful book called The Book of Birds, A Field Guide to Wonder and Loss. Robert McFarlane and the illustrator is Jackie Morris. And they were the creators of The Lost Worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just gorgeous. Her illustrations are wonderful. It's about how we're losing so many birds. They're both Brits, but we won't hold that against them.
He's a terrific writer.
Yeah.
A poet.
And, well, he uses words I have to look up because they're a little archaic,
When booksellers get challenged.
But
you know.
And then you see also how Jackie made some of these illustrations. Like you'll see, like there's the palette that she eventually
uses for
this picture. Sorry, you all can't see it.
It's
and there's
beautiful
birds I've never heard of. Like there's one bird, I think it's the first one, who travels from Alaska to New Zealand without stopping. And just eats and eats, and somehow in that travel, their kidney, their liver, and their gut reduces. And they basically collapse on the beach when they get to New Zealand. So,
as would we.
Long time before that, though. I would recommend it for anyone who's interested in birds and anyone that just wants a beautiful book. It's also, it's gorgeous. It has a yellow ribbon, which we
and love. It's a gold cover.
Yes.
Just like the Trump book and just like the Silva book. There's a lot of gold this
summer. Yeah, a lot of gold this summer. That's right. It's The Book of Birds, A Field Guide to Wonder and Loss by Robert McFarlane and Jackie Morris. You got 2 minutes for me, Matt?
I have three more books, but one I want to talk about, which is an old book, because I want to talk about it because the author, John Crowley, his most famous book, Little Big, Crowley died a couple of days ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I've lost my best friend writer. He wrote this book, Little Big, while he was living in Lenox back in the 70s and 80s. And John, the book is a fantasy novel about a family that has connections to the world of fairies and elves, but it's so much more than that. And the literature is so much homage to let's say Alice in Wonderland or Midsummer Night's Dream or even The Odyssey. And Crowley, we're gonna miss him, but we're gonna keep selling his book. The other books I have, they'll just be on my website.
Excellent. And Joan has a full list too. You can see all of those lists on our website, wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable. You can also check out Joan's website for Odyssey Books, odysseybks.com, and the bookstore, it's bookstoreinlenox.com, bookstoreinlenox.com, for more information on all the cool events coming up at those two wonderful bookstores. Joan, Matt,
and
family,
Joe.
Thank you very much for
thank you.
Being
it's always
us.
Great, even
great
though
pleasure.
It's a long drive, but it's great to come here.
Thank you very much. All of our segments available online, wamc.org/roundtable or via podcast. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and X as at WAMC Radio. Thanks to our panel, Fatima Gilliam, Anna Markowitz, JP Miller, and Robert Pendicio. Kudos to our producer Madeline Reynolds and our engineer Bailey Janes. I'm Joe Donahue. Stay tuned now for the Roundtable with Ray Graff.